This is KDNK from Carbondale, Colorado. Thanks for listening on this Wednesday, January 4th. An earthquake registering 2.9 on the Richter scale hit southwest of Newcastle on Christmas Day. It is uncertain at this point whether it was caused by injection wells from nearby natural gas exploration, but the Grand Valley Citizens Alliance, a local energy watchdog group, wants to rule that out. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marr spoke with Leslie Robinson, director of the group, and has this update.
Leslie Robinson's husband was at the grocery store when he overheard a clerk talking about being awakened by the earthquake on Christmas.
So I went to the U.S. geological site, and sure enough, there had been a 2.9 quake.
At 2.9, the tremor is too small to cause houses to collapse or highways to break in half, but it was big enough to trigger an investigation by the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, or COGCC. Their rules say that anything greater than 2.5 needs to be checked out. Robinson asked the COGCC to see if the quake had anything to do with injection wells that are geologically close to Newcastle.
There is a uplift of Hogback Mountain between the site of the quake and the massive oil and gas development that's located south of Newcastle. And both the wells and the quake were located about 1.2 miles below the surface. The wells are located uphill from the quake site.
Injection wells used for oil and gas exploration have caused quakes in Greeley, Colorado, and in Oklahoma. The GVCA is also concerned about how the quake may have compromised the integrity of concrete casings around pipes that are used for fracking. Robinson says the COGCC does not think the injection wells had anything to do with this quake.
But should a series of quakes happen in that area, they certainly are going to jump back in and take a more in-depth look at the quake cause. They are also asking the oil and gas companies to check the pressure in the lines just to make sure that none of the casings have been compromised.
She's satisfied with COGCC's assessment for now, but advises landowners in the area to be vigilant.
You know, they might want to check their water wells. They might want to just be on the lookout for any unusual water, like in dry irrigation canals or dead vegetation around water that normally is not seen in a location. Who knows what the quake could be caused by and what the effects could be.
The Newcastle earthquake was the second quake in western Garfield County in the past year. The COGCC could not be reached for comment. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
There is a winter storm warning through Thursday evening here in the Roaring Fork Valley. Aspen could see 3 to 7 inches of snow today, 3 to 7 inches of snow tonight, and 1 to 3 inches tomorrow. Extremely cold temperatures tomorrow night for a low, as Carbondale expected to drop to 1 below on Thursday night for a low. Our low tonight, 24 degrees, our high today, 33. Democratic Senator Lucia Guzman from Denver is the only legislative leader returning to her role, but it's something she didn't expect. She thought her party would gain the majority, but after the November election, Democrats are still one seat shy.
You're the only returning legislative leader coming into this session, and your party is still in the minority. Was this an outcome you were anticipating?
No, we didn't anticipate this. We had worked very hard to move ourselves back into the majority and had planned a session regarding the fact that we would be in majority and so forth. So we were disappointed.
Has it been more work than you anticipated just because you did have to kind of shift focus?
We have a total of 17 of us and 7 are brand new. So that's taken a lot of time. And then as well as those working with those who are returning, people are let down and people need lifting up and they need some ways to deal with the fact that they're not in fact chairing a committee, but they're on the committee and so forth and so on. So that's where the heavy work comes from. It's really comes from leadership. That lower morale comes from not only our loss in the state Senate, but also the national elections, the tremendous turnaround that we've seen there, and the anxiety and concerns that are not only within our own caucus, but throughout the state and throughout the nation.
What do you think your party needs to do differently?
I don't think that we lost gaining the majority because we didn't do something. I think we will be meeting with various parts of the Democratic Party to look at what happened, what are the statistics, what does the data show us, and then begin to compile some objectives in terms of what we should do. Our party definitely needs to listen to each other, to our constituents across the state. Our party needs to be aware of the changes that are coming about in some critical counties across the state.
Do the results of the presidential election and the divided nation change how you approach the session, and if so, how?
It does change. First of all, we need to look at what actions might filter down to us. Issues around renewable energy, climate change, issues about immigration, and so forth and so on. We need to be a little bit more on the defense, ready to defend who we've been, what laws have been passed.
Do you think it'll be harder for your party to work with Republicans? Do you see yourself more as the opposition voice, or do you think there will be more bipartisanship? We're not leading into a big presidential election year.
I think we'll be able to work together in two or three different areas. We want to come to some kind of agreement because over the past years, members of both of our parties, our constituents, have wanted certain things to happen. I believe that we both want the same things, but we have different ways of going about it. There's not an evil and good situation here. It's just someone won and someone lost, but the players in many ways are the same.
It maybe makes a difference, too, that the lawmakers here spend a lot of time face-to-face with each other, working with each other, being on the floor all day together and sometimes late into the night. So you build maybe a different relationship than in Washington where there isn't as much face time.
Oh, that's exactly right. And then we're a small group, 35 people.
One thing that is new this year, you've created a position, the Deputy Minority Leader for Conservation, Clean Energy, and Climate Change. Mm-hmm. Talk about your reasoning behind this and why you wanted this specific position versus lawmakers working on the issue as they see fit throughout the session.
I had planned long and hard for our being in the majority, and one of the plans I had was to separate agriculture, natural resources, and energy. I was going to separate energy from that committee because I feel like that is one of our most important issues for these next 2 years.
That was Senate Minority Leader Lucia Guzman. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
On the latest edition of Living Permaculture, hosts Stephanie Sison and Jerome Osinkowski spoke to Casey Pekera from Wild Mountain Seeds, a food production research firm at the Old Thompson Creek Ranch. Here they talk about intercropping.
We're really interested in getting into staple crop breeding from our cold legume species like fava beans, lentils, garbanzos, peas. Those are particularly important to us because they're soil builders. They fix nitrogen as well as they're high protein sources and make seeds that can be stored over a long period of time to get us through the winter. Focus, I think, will be as we become more resilient as a culture is to grow staples during the summer. Think about winter food during the summer and move a little bit away from the normal market garden where we're growing high turnover salads and things that don't really keep us alive in the winter.
You know, a lot of these intercropping beans and peas and favas, they're very easy to cook and they're very nutrient rich. They have the proteins that some of these other salad greens and the tomatoes don't have. So it really rounds out your diet, and also it's fixing nitrogen for the soil, and it's also creating fodder. You can coppice that, lay it down as mulch, or you can turn it under. So it's a win-win situation, especially for new farmers who are trying to build soils and not to bring in a lot of compost. They can actually grow their own compost with these intercropping legumes, right?
Yeah, legumes, and also with vigorous grasses like your corn or wheat or rye or things that we can use to make into a nice C-to-N match for creating good compost.
I've been making barley grass out of some barley I got from up the road here, getting more chlorophyll into my diet in the wintertime besides the kale and charge we grow, but just growing a dozen trays of barley grass and juicing those and then putting them in your smoothie in the morning is a good way to get a big punch of then after you grow that out, I let it grow again and then just feed it to the rabbits and the chickens.
And I'd love for you guys to unpack the word intercropping for our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with the farming lingo and don't know what that is.
Yeah, so intercropping is basically where you're planting two different species of plants together in the same beds. So they have beneficial relationships to each of those species, where the nitrogen being fixed by the bacteria on the roots of the legume are creating enough excess for the corn, where also the corn sugars on the roots are feeding the bacteria of the bean. So what I've found is there's a happy medium between putting too much together, knowing the timing. So if I want to put my beans with my corn, I know that I want to plant my beans when my corn's 4 inches tall so that it works all together. So a lot of people get maybe discouraged on interplanting because they haven't gotten the full system down. But what's really awesome from a soil building standpoint, we grew corn, squash, and beans together. If we find that soil is maybe a little bit lean, it needs to be built up, the beans dominate the growing usually. So the three sisters will kind of choose what the soil needs, also giving you what the human needs. So we had three 70-foot beds planted to corn, squash, and beans, and I think we probably ended up with about 50 pounds of fava beans off that bed, another 50 pounds of corn, flour corn, and then another, I think, nearly 700 pounds of winter squash.
Wow.
So those are incredible yields, but it's good for a small startup. We're creating a lot of roots. The soil's not left barren. It's all covered in that stuff over winter, and we're still, I think, being pretty net positive on the soil building whilst creating a lot of staple crops.
You can hear the complete interview by going to Living Permaculture page on our website, kdnk.org.